You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. My name is Jim Faunin, and I represent Baystar Mechanical, Inc. May it please the Court. The issue in this appeal is whether the Circuit Court erred in awarding liquidated damages that equaled 100% of the total remaining value of the contract between the parties. The Circuit Court's ruling should be reversed for three reasons. First, the liquidated damages provision upon which the Circuit Court relied is inapplicable. Second, the liquidated damages provisions in the contract should be construed as unenforceable penalties. And third, that Billy Casper Golf breached the agreement itself and therefore is entitled to no damages whatsoever. I'll address each reason in turn. First, the Circuit Court erroneously relied on paragraph 6B as in void of the contract. And that provision is not applicable because it would only be applicable if Billy Casper Golf had terminated the agreement and the court made a finding that Billy Casper Golf at the time was not in default.
So, I mean, the trial judge's letter opinion got it exactly backwards. Used the clause applicable to the subcontractor, whereas there was no clause for liquidated damages applicable to the contractor for a termination by default.
That is correct, Your Honor. In fact, the contract itself says that the contractor, in this case Baystar, had the right to terminate for default, and then paragraph 5C of the contract said that if there's a default, that either party can then sue for whatever damages are available under the law, which is another reason why the liquidated damages provision should not be enforced, because clearly...
So did the trial judge ever hold one way or the other whether or not Baystar's termination by default alleging breach by the subcontractor was on the merits valid, that in fact there was a subcontractor breach, that in fact there was a right to terminate by for cause?
No, Your Honor. The Circuit Court identified two issues that it felt that it had to resolve. One was whether the alleged notices that Baystar claimed that it gave to Billy Casper Golf of default complied with the contract's notice provisions, and two, whether the liquidated damages provisions should be construed as a penalty. So with regard to the issue of whether Billy Casper Golf ever defaulted, the court never made a ruling on that.
So in theory, what could have happened but didn't happen is a holding that the contractor had a right to terminate by default but screwed up the notice provision. Okay, there's a minor breach and there's a major breach. You have a benefit of the bargain, so you get 10 days or whatever the termination period is of notice. But you don't get a liquidated damage recovery, which is limited to termination by convenience. That is the hypothetical that could have happened.
That is correct, Your Honor. And in fact, if I'm understanding you correctly,
yeah.
What I understood you to say is that in this particular case, liquidated damages just don't apply because Baystar terminated for default, and the court just decided we didn't give prior notice as required.
So in theory, you breach. So what? You get sued for breach of contract, but that doesn't mean you get liquidated damages imposed on you.
That is correct, Your Honor, and that is exactly what our position is.
So it seems that the trial judge decided that no notice equals termination for convenience.
And I don't believe that that's the case, Your Honor, and I say that because, first of all, the trial judge never explicitly said that's the case. Second, in the court's order, she cites the paragraph 6B, not 6D of the contract. 6D of the contract relates to terminations for convenience. And the third reason why I say that is after the court ruled, Baystar filed a motion for reconsideration and specifically informed the judge that we object to any finding on paragraph 6B because Billy Casper Golf did not terminate the contract, Baystar did. In its opposition to our motion for reconsideration, Billy Casper Golf admitted that 6B is inapplicable. Yet, the Circuit Court continued to rely on 6B in issuing liquidated damages. And what I would suggest to the court then is that at least implicitly, the circuit court found this was not a termination for convenience, and therefore this court should not overturn that unless that conclusion of fact is not supported by the evidence.
And so, you know, even if the trial judge had said, no, I find it's a termination by convenience, it obviously wasn't. You read the termination letter, it's a termination for cause. Now, if that's a breach, it's a breach, but it's not a termination by convenience.
And that is correct, Your Honor, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's exactly correct. There would be a clear error of default if the judge did make that determination, but I would suggest she never did make that determination.
Did the trial judge respond in writing to your motion for reconsideration on the error made in using 6B?
She did, but not addressing any specific questions. She just issued an order saying she's read the briefs and she's going with her decision.
There was no discussion of that.
No oral argument. No, nothing. That is correct. And then just moving on, even if the liquidated damages provisions were applicable, which they're not, this court should construe them as an unenforceable penalty for three different reasons. One is the liquidated damages provisions are punitive on their face. The second is that the actual damages were in fact susceptible to definitive measurement at the time of contracting. And three, that the liquidated damages are grossly in excess of the actual damages. So starting with the first one, as far as liquidated damages provisions are punitive on their face. In fact, the parties admit in the contract that they were deeming this termination fee, as it's called in the contract, a penalty. And specifically, I refer to paragraph 6.3 of the contract, where it says that contractor shall have the right to terminate the agreement without the payment of a termination fee, cancellation fee, or other penalty. So the parties themselves in their own contract were considering this fee as a penalty. Second, the provision 5C, paragraph 5C of the contract, provides that either party, in the event of default, can pursue all available remedies at law. Well, that obviates the need for any liquidated damages, and it also manifests the penal nature of the liquidated damages clause, because the non-breaching party would say, okay, are the liquidated damages higher than my actual damages? And if so, rely on the liquidated damages provision. So again, on its face, it's penal. The penal nature is also manifested in the agreement itself, because there's two different ways that Billy Gasper Goff could calculate liquidated damages, depending on whether, if it were a termination for convenience, whether 90 days prior written notice was given. And if 90-day prior written notice was given, then the liquidated damages would be 90 days you're paying whatever the monthly fee was. In this case, it was $16,000 up till February of 2013, and then $17,000 a month afterwards, times 50% of the remaining life. Now, in the situation, if Baystar had not given 90 days prior notice, then the liquidated damages would be what the court awarded, in fact, was 100% of the monthly fee over the remaining life of the agreement. And I would suggest that whether Baystar, if it were termination of convenience, which it wasn't, but if it were, the Baystar, Billy Casper Goff would not have been hurt any more whether Baystar had given 90 days notice or not, other than during the first 90 days. So at most, in the latter situation, the liquidated damages would be full 100% of the monthly fee for 3 months, and then 50% for the rest of the term of the agreement, which is not the case. So Baystar Baystar would be penalized even more for not giving 90 days notice, and neither of those liquidated damages relate to actual damages that would have been incurred by Billy Casper Goff. Which leads to the next issue. One of the tests for determining the enforceability, as the court knows, of liquidated damages is whether actual damages would have been difficult to determine at the time of contracting. In other words, at the time of contracting, could everyone reasonably foresee that if a breach were to occur, it would be it would not be difficult to determine what the damages would be? And then that's exactly the case that we have. This isn't like the building of a building or the sale of real estate where we don't know what damage would occur if the building doesn't get built on time or if the sale of the house doesn't go through. This is a simple case of revenue minus expenses. And so the damages, the actual damages, were not going to be difficult to define.
Counsel, may I ask a question about 6D? What would be the logic, and I understand parties may contract so logically, but what would be the logic of having a larger damage award if they give notice than if they don't give notice? Your argument that the provision does not apply to the renewal. Wouldn't that be totally illogical that if I give you notice, I have to pay you more money than if I don't? Is that the reason?
Well, the way this is set up now, if Baystar had given notice, they would pay less than if they don't give money. The first part of the paragraph 60s.
But if it doesn't apply in the renewal.
I'm sorry, okay.
If it doesn't apply in the second year, then don't they end up being better off just terminating it straight out than giving them notice?
Absolutely, yes, Your Honor. Billy Casper Goff drafted the agreement, so I really can't explain it other than the other LD, in the two other places that LD damages are provided for, they follow it up each time that this applies to renewal terms, but in that latter case, the contract doesn't. The liquidated damages in this case are grossly disproportionate to the actual damages. The parties agree that Billy Casper Golf incurred $150,000 of expenses during the contract's first term. The contract was terminated in the contract's second term, really within the first month of the contract's second term. If we apply the $150,000, which Billy Casper Golf would continue, those type of expenses would continue, it's the actual damages would be $52,000. Now, Billy Casper Golf argues, well, the weather could have been less rainy, so it could have been different, or that there could have been some additional work that we could have done. But if that's the case, then Billy Casper Goff had the obligation and the requirement to show, well, how would these damages have differed? And they failed to do it completely. So under this record...
But the problem with that is that you don't know about the $150,000 in expenses and taxes and overhead and employee expenses when you're drafting the contract. You only figure that out after you do the contract for a year and you look at your financial statement.
And while you wouldn't know the exact amount, Your Honor, you would know, or at least Billy Casper Golf would have known in advance of the contract, number one, because they testified that their usual profit margin is 15 to 20% on these types of contracts. And second, it would be easy. I don't think the question is whether the parties can definitively determine the exact amount of damages that would occur if and when a breach occurs down the road. I think the question is, Would it be difficult to determine what those contract damages would be if and when a breach occurs?
But this whole discussion, of course, is beside the point if this particular clause has nothing to do with the termination by for default.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is correct. And just quickly, as far as additional work, the contract does provide that Billy Casper Golf could be given additional work outside the contract, as set forth in a Schedule B, but the parties never agreed to a Schedule B. So whatever additional work there may or may not have been was unknown, and that there was no obligation to give that work to Billy Casper Golf. And if, in fact, it was an independent contract each time. Well, we have this additional work that needs to be done. We want to do it for X dollars. Will you agree? And if so, there's a purchase order issue. Very minor work was done under that, this additional work during the first term of the contract. But again, the parties never agreed to what the work should be. And finally, the court erred by awarding any damages to Billy Casper Golf, because it was in default at the time that we terminated the contract, and that the notice provisions relied on by the circuit court were inapplicable because of the notwithstanding language, because there were more than two defaults in the same 12-month period.
I've got a question for you. What is a termination for notice, for convenience?
A termination for convenience it's not defined in the contract, but in traditional parlance, it's...
conventional parlance. I want pursuant to the terms of this contract, because it seems to me, in the contract language, it basically talks about a termination with 90 days written notice as a termination for convenience.
Well, it says two different things in that particular clause. It says termination with or without 90 days notice. But a termination for convenience is if Baystar had terminated the contract for no reason, no cause, no default, no alleged default, just because it decided that it wanted to go a different way.
Okay. All right. Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Kristen Bennett, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee Billy Casper Golf, LLC. My colleague, I believe, frames the question incorrectly with regard to the liquidated damages. There was a moment or two of discussion with regard to the extra work that is provided for under the contract. But the liquidated damages at issue in this case did not provide for 100% profit under this contract.
Can I ask you this before you get to the validity of liquidated damage calculation? Didn't the trial court obviously err in using and quoting in full 6B, which is inapplicable?
Your Honor, I think it was a mistake, but I think the argument that it's 6B versus 6D is form over substance.
So a termination by default is substantially the same thing as a termination by convenience?
Without notice. But also, Your Honor, if you look into the judge's opinion, she clearly, on the last page of her opinion, talks about all of her discussion being related to the loss suffered by the plaintiff, which is Billy Casper Golf, as a result of defendant's, Baystar's, termination of the contract.
Was Baystar right or wrong in terminating for cause? Was there a breach by the subcontract?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, was there ever a holding by the trial court that that's true or false?
There was a holding by the factual finding by the trial court that there weren't ever actual notices.
Well, that's not the question, though. The question is whether or not, if they didn't get the notice, they breached the contract in exercising the termination clause. But if they had a right to if someone breaches the contract and it's material and substantial, you can terminate, right? With or without notice. You may violate a notice provision, but you can still terminate. My question is, it seems as though this whole case got way ahead of the point and completely missed the point, which is, well, did the subcontractor in fact breach the contract at the level sufficient to allow the prime contractor to say, you've breached, I'm walking?
I believe, Your Honor, it's implicit in the court's finding with regard to notice, and I understand what you're saying, that nothing rose to the level that you'll see in the judge's opinion and the testimony that was elicited during trial, that the discussions back and forth that Baystar claimed were defaults were just regular communications. This is a 230-acre property with different sections. It required grass to be a certain length here, a certain length there. There were varying discussions all over the place.
Yeah, I get that. Let me ask one follow-up. Suppose, for the sake of argument, you're right, which is, for me, a great supposition, by the way. But suppose it was actually a trial on the question whether or not the subcontractor defaulted and whether or not the default was at a magnitude permitting a termination by default. And let's say, for the sake of argument, the notice provision was violated. That doesn't mean you get liquidated damages. The party that breaches pays benefit of the bargain or out-of-pocket or some sort of restitutionary award. You get liquidated damages only when there's a clause saying it. And there's no clause saying it.
Well, I disagree, Your Honor, because this paragraph 6D, which is the termination for convenience provision, is the paragraph pursuant to which the complaint was drawn.
But 6D is convenience, which means you're buying your way out of a contract. That is, in fact, what it is in common parlance. It's not a termination by default. A contracting party is buying their way out of the contract. They're agreeing in advance. If I want to walk for no reason at all, here's what I'm willing to pay you. But that's not what happened here.
Your Honor, with all due respect, we believe that is what happened here, and the evidence at trial was geared toward whether there was a default or not. The court did not determine that there was a default. And
can I stop there? Did you mean to say that? The court did not determine there wasn't a default?
The court did not determine that there was a default. There was no determination.
So how do we know whether or not a termination by default was valid or invalid?
Because based on the court's, I'm saying you can read this implicitly in the judge's opinion, that there was lengthy discussion about whether there were any notices of default. And so there was none found as a factual matter, a finding by the court, that there was no notice of default. I think you can then infer that there wasn't a default, especially given the underpinnings of the discussion before the court, that these notices that Baystar was arguing were notices of default were actually just communications about regular project maintenance, not any actual default. So that leaves us to a termination for convenience. And if I may point out to the justices that most of the arguments that are presented here with regard to Section 6C and 6D and how they all interplay were not raised before the court below. I believe, as I had started off, that this reference to Section 6B that's in the judge's opinion is a harmless error, is a mistake. And her remaining part of her decision definitely refers to the result of the defendant's, again, Baystar's termination of the contract. And
well,
if you look at 6B...
letter opinion by the trial judge said 6B governs this case. The motion to reconsider says, read it again, judge, it doesn't govern this case, it has nothing to do with this case. Mm-hmm. The reconsideration ruling was denied, no oral argument, no hearing, next case. So the trial judge is saying on this record, I believe 6B governs. You don't,
I
know, because
I disagree,
it obviously
Your Honor,
doesn't.
I understand what you're saying. With regard to this section, your discussion about if a termination for default, and again, paragraph 6C was never argued, presented to the trial judge for her determination at all. But if we're looking at it here, as was just argued by counsel for Baystar, it states that the contractor, which is Baystar, shall have the right to terminate the agreement without the payment of a termination fee, cancellation fee, etc., if the termination is a result of an event of default by Billy Casper Golf. If you read that the other way, if they do terminate and it's not an event of default, then there would be a termination fee. Your Honor was asking me if there was any way to find that in the contract, and I believe that that is there.
So there's a finding by the trial court that the subcontractor did not breach a contract, did not default.
No, she did not make that explicit finding, Your Honor. I believe, though, that in her discussion of whether the emails that Baystar claimed were notices of default were not, and the underpinnings of that discussion was that there was no default even discussed in those emails, would lead the court to decide that there was not a default. But I agree with Your Honor that those words don't appear that explicitly in this order, but I think that's the only way to go. The whole case was about these emails and these discussions back and forth and whether they were notices of default.
Well, didn't under the contract you had to give a notice of default and an opportunity to cure?
Yes,
you had a 30-day period to cure, and as long as you were diligently pursuing the cure, you had up to 60 days, correct?
Correct, Your
Honor. So there were none of those notices given in this case.
Correct.
So there was no capital E event of capital D default, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. And that was a factual finding by the judge, which is, I think, and something that this court needs to give some level of deference to. It's not a legal finding. And that's where I'm saying I think we come to the point that although those words are not written on the page, that the court implicitly found that there wasn't a default because these notices didn't give anybody notice of any default. With regard to the discussion about the liquidated damages provision being inappropriate pursuant to law, my colleague discussed the fact that the liquidated damages provision purportedly gives 100% of the contract value back, and that is incorrect. The contract itself talks about the fact that there is a monthly fee, $16,000 a month, and at some point it steps up to $17,000. But in addition, and this is another factual finding that's set forth in the trial judge's order, but in addition to that base fee, the contractor shall pay Billy Casper Golf for any additional services, including snow removal, tree removal, emergency services, special events, and any additional work that may arise specifically in Exhibit B. And as my colleague pointed out, there is no Exhibit B. But that doesn't negate the fact that the contract itself called for this other extra work. And in fact, the testimony below was that there were instances in the base year where extra work was performed by Billy Casper and paid for. It was undisputed. So the liquidated damages provision that has different levels, again, this argument that the different levels somehow underscores a penal nature of the liquidated damages was not argued to the court below, so I believe it's been waived, but if I need to address it here, I will. But the award of liquidated damages for the base amount going forward isn't 100% because the contract on its face in Section 4 expressly recognizes that there's going to be extra work that's going to be paid in addition to that $16,000. The lack of Exhibit B is meaningless to that because there are exact provisions that did in fact occur during the base year that additional monies were paid. So in a liquidated damages provision, when you're getting the base fee going forward for the balance of the term, that's not 100%. And again, with regard to the different applications, in the event of a 90-day notice, there's a lesser fee, basically half of the additional fees going forward. That's because that entitles the party who's being defaulted, or excuse me, being terminated, to find other work during that period of time. So it makes sense that it would be less. But if they do this termination without the notice, that could be disallow the terminated party to find additional work. It makes sense. It's not penal. It makes sense in the context of that termination. Additionally, the issue about weather and the different seasons, especially on a grounds maintenance project, which this was, again, 230 acres with varying levels of performance at different sections, the testimony was undisputed. And it was actually corroborated by some of the witnesses on behalf of Baystar that the weather plays a huge impact on these kinds of projects, and it plays a huge impact on the season. You know, in January and December, when all they're doing is basically snow removal, if that even happens in Northern Virginia, and maybe blowing leaves, that sort of thing, you only need one or two guys out there. But in the height of the season, you need more people. So if you're terminated unexpectedly without notice in the height of your season when your expenses are at their highest, that hurts more. And therefore, it makes sense for this step provision for liquidated damages. It doesn't underscore the penal nature. In fact, it underscores the fact that it's not penal, that it's attempting to take into consideration future circumstances that you can't possibly know. As Your Honor's pointed out, this contract was signed in December of 2011. Each season is very different, and it's not possible to find a definitive measurement. And that's what the cases say, whether there's a definite measure of damages. That would be the only reason to find a liquidated damages provision inapplicable, something like an amount of money that's going to be paid. It's a definitive amount. But as you go forward, you don't know what the weather conditions are going to be. You don't know if it's going to be a particularly heavy snow year, which would be even more of that extra work. It's very fluctuating both between seasons and within the seasons with the weather.
Counsel, what happens in the second year under 6D? The argument has been made that because it doesn't have the renewal language, that it doesn't apply.
Your Honor, I disagree with that because in 6D, there are defined terms in this contract with regard to the base year and the term of the contract. And you'll notice the last line in 6D, while it does not have the language I recognize that the previous section does about the continuing years, it does say that the termination fee shall be equal to the balance of the contract calculated as the base fee times the months remaining in the term, lowercase t, not the defined term, the base year versus the other years. So that provision, since it expressly does not use the defined term in the contract, applies equally to all of the years. It had been extended for a year, so the term, the remaining term of that agreement now was the 10 months remaining in the current year. The grossly in excess argument, again, I think fails. That's the other thing that Baystar would have the burden of proof in order to overturn. These are two sophisticated parties entering into this kind of ground program, ground lease project that they both were engaged in. As counsel had pointed out and as the briefs continued, they recognize that there was at least $52,000 in damages with regard to the remaining 10 months. When you apply that, it's a 3.26 multiplier in comparison with the damages.
Your time has expired.
Yes, Your Honor.
Call the next case.